Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Connecting Faith. Bill Arnold in for Neil Stavem today. Okay, man, we're talking specifically about you today, but I think this is going to appeal to everyone because men, we need to have an honest conversation about manhood. And I think everyone would be of interest to hear that. And of course, it's not about the size of your paycheck or your athletic ability. It's not about your competitive spirit either. Manhood isn't about what you do. It's about who you are. And my guest today, Nate Pyle, has written a book called Man Enough, How Jesus Redefines Manhood. And he calls men to embrace their weaknesses. All right, let's go to break, Ted.
Don't want to go there today, huh?
I'm so tired. Let's go to break.
Yeah,
I'm just kidding. So we've got a full day of testosterone fueled discussion I think we're going to have. This would be good. I read his book about a month ago, and I've since forgotten virtually everything in it, only because I can't read and comprehend that well.
It's too much. Yeah.
And I have notes I've written in the margins that make no sense to me. So hopefully Nate will be able to sort all this out for me.
We'll get it all cleared up, yeah. And like you said, I think it's going to be good for women to hear this too, give them some insight into what makes men tick, right?
Absolutely, because men nowadays are told they've got to be warriors for God, and I think that creates even more confusion in the minds of men. It's like, what is this warrior stuff?
Yeah.
You've heard that before.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't it bantered around the church all the
time?
Sure,
yeah. And then there's even a part of me that goes, no, that's something else I have to do.
You know? And so we want to talk about the shifting sands. You have to say that very carefully and slowly. Shifting sands of the culture and how men today are asked to do all kinds of things and be something that maybe they're not. And we need to start with understanding that God's grace and God's love and God's security makes us men who we are to start with. Mm. So, Nate Pyle, welcome to the program, my friend.
Well, thank you. It's great to be with you all.
Well, I appreciate your book. I jumped on it right away because there is lots of pressure on men today. For example, I'll just throw this out. It seems that on Mother's Day at church, the pastor speaks glowingly about how perfect mothers are, and they are the most perfect things ever. And then on Father's Day, the sermon is, all right, men, we gotta improve. We could do things better.
Right. It does seem that way, that Father's Day sermons tend to be the coach grabbing the player by the helmet and giving them a really big pep talk and sometimes even yelling at them, hey, you're not doing your job. You've got to get out there and cover more. You've got to show up differently. And I think men are given that message a lot at church.
Mm-hmm. And we are we're looking at Jesus today. We want to look at the way he defined manhood. So give our audience a teaser about that.
Yeah, I think for all Christians, Jesus is the prototypical human, right? He's the person we are all trying to emulate. And even so for us, just as men, we want to be men as Jesus embodied his masculinity. And what we see when we look at Jesus is someone who, in a lot of ways, was a countercultural man, not just for his time period, but also for ours as well. But Jesus did things that would seem unmanly in the Roman culture. He showed emotion. He let the passions get the best of him. He was someone who did not defend himself in public. He was humiliated in public, and he was conquered, really. And so in many ways, Jesus failed to live up to being a man in the Roman culture. And I think some of that stuff even carries over into our American culture, where men are supposed to be strong, and yet in some ways it looks like Jesus was weak as he cried at the loss of his friends, as he did not conquer his enemies, at least not in the way that we think someone should conquer his enemies. And mm-hmm. So Jesus really does challenge our conceptions of what a man should be and what a man looks like.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about the shift in American Christianity, which was urging men to man up and be the warriors God created them to be. What? Okay, how did we get there?
Yeah, I think that American Christian masculinity has really been tied to American ideals about masculinity. And when you look at American masculinity and how it's shifted over the years, you can see all the way back to the time of the Revolution, when America was gaining its independence from England. That idea of independence seeped its way into what a man should be. So a man should be someone who is independent. A man should be someone who's self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
A man should be someone who is almost self-created, right? The self-made man, that ideal became someone that was prominent. And then with the Industrial Revolution, as men moved off the farms and went into the cities and began to work in factories, in the 1800s, we see the term breadwinner come up.
Mm-hmm.
And so men now are called to be breadwinners. During the world wars, now all of a sudden we get a re-emphasis of the men as warriors, and this is what men do. Men protect, men go off and fight the battles, and those who maybe cannot, they have different roles here at home, and all of that's been shifting. And again, we're seeing it shift today with some of the equality stuff that are happening in American culture. So women going back to work and women taking more prominent roles in various aspects of society has displaced men and has caused, I think, a lot of anxiety within men as our roles are now in a pretty big shift at this period of time.
Mm-hmm. Even when you look at the agricultural society that sons worked side by side with their fathers, and then the Industrial Revolution comes along and men go into the work and they're not with their sons all day long. And now all of a sudden we have to we identify by not who we are, but we identify by what we do. And that's the first thing anybody asks anybody on a golf course. So what do you do?
Exactly. Our identity as men is so wrapped up in how we make a living in the world about what we do. We don't ask questions about, you know, how you feel so much, because we're just not interested in that. That to some extent feels too feminine and isn't tied up to our identity. So we want to know, you know, what do you do? Because that tells me how then I should relate to you. And because I think men are constantly in competition with each other.
Oh, you think?
And
so far, my comments have been better than yours, Nate, just so you know.
Yeah, well, I think that, and that's part of it, is we're constantly in competition with each other. And by figuring out what you do versus what I do, now I can figure out how do we relate to each other? Who's got the higher hand here?
Yeah,
that's a big part of it.
Yeah, we're always trying to measure where we fit in. And that's kind of sad too. Okay, I'm talking to Nate Pyle. He's written a book called Man Enough: How Jesus Redefines Manhood. Nate, let me ask you this: Why do we need to reevaluate the concept of manliness in our culture?
I think precisely because we're in another period where our understanding of what it means to be a man is shifting in the culture, which then impacts, you know, what happens in the church as well. As much as we'd like to say that church is separate from culture, our culture very much impacts us as individuals, that impact how we read the Bible. And so we're in that time period where things are shifting, so we have to begin to reevaluate what does it mean to be a man in the image of Jesus, and go back and try to leave behind these cultural ideals and standards, and really look at it from a biblical standpoint so that we can better better imitate Jesus in the world. So I think that's why it's really important for us to have this conversation again. And again, what I'll also say to that is, with women's roles changing by having more opportunities outside of the home, taking on leadership positions in different organizations, men and women have to learn how to relate to one another. And so having these conversations around gender, around what it means to be men and women created in the image of God, become very, very important for us.
Mm-hmm. This idea that men have to almost take on a role, and there's nothing wrong with that, because that's what men mm-hmm. should be doing, understanding the office of husband, the office of, you know, whatever it is, boss, and living with biblical principles to fill that role out. So that's a good thing. But who's defining that, and where are we getting our information about those roles?
Exactly. And I think that obviously for us as Christians comes from the Bible, that what we find in Scripture gives us the standards by which we should measure whether or not we are living into those roles. And so what we see in Scripture is, you know, who Jesus is, how he related to one another. We see in Timothy and in Titus the qualifications of an elder. And while those are not necessarily just related to a man, they give us a really good picture of what a man is supposed to do and how he's supposed to relate to those in his life, whether it be his family or coworkers or people at his church or friends. And also at the same time, recognizing that when we follow Jesus, we will be living in a countercultural way, and that sometimes means we've got to take on things that don't feel manly. So one of the big things I talk about in the book, which we've already addressed a little bit, is this idea of weakness, and we see it in Jesus. We see Paul talk about it, that when he's weak, then he is strong. Mm-hmm. And so these typical passages that we go to talk about masculinity, those can be really helpful, but we also have to look at the full witness of Scripture to see how a disciple of Jesus is to live in the world and incorporate that into our understandings of what it means to be a man.
That's great. All right, Nate, we're going to take a little break. We come back lots more with Nate Pyle, his book, Man Enough, How Jesus Redefines Manhood. If you have a question or a comment about manhood and want to get involved in today's program, give us a call, 1-877-933-2484. Chris is standing by the phone, ready to take your call. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Bill Arnold in today for Neil Stavem. I'm talking to Nate Pyle. He's written a book called Man Enough, How Jesus Redefines Manhood. And as I'm reading this, Nate, one of the things talking about prior to the American Revolution, being a man meant owning land, being a strong moral authority at home, having a high level of civic involvement, and holding to Christian morals. And, of course, that feels like nothing has changed.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways it does, but I think that that applies to a very small subset of people. Does it mean that the person who does not own land, who lives in an apartment or rents a house from someone, are they less of a man? Is someone who is maybe working so hard to provide for their family and is not involved civically because they just don't have the time, the bandwidth to be both at work and at home in a way that they need to be, does that mean they're less of a man? And so this is where I begin to call in some of the questions about these standards that our culture gives, and even sometimes those things that we talk about in church. So you, in the last segment, you brought up the Father's Day sermon and how that can sometimes be sort of a challenge and getting in men's face. A man at church is often told that he's got to be out in the world providing for his family, that he's got to be a good dad around his kids and not just have quality time with them, but quantity of time as well, mm-hmm. that he's got to be involved in church and he's got to be the spiritual leader and all of these things. And it begins to be such a burden that if a man fails in one of these areas, they may feel like they're less of a man, that they're not measuring up. And is that the way that God really looks at us as men? That's the question that I begin to raise in the book.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you're doing all the right things, and you're raising your family, and now you've got teenage daughters that maybe aren't listening to you or giving you the respect you deserve as a dad. What do you do with that?
That becomes a really tricky question. That's a parenting question in terms of how do you relate to your kids. Now, I'll be honest, as someone who doesn't have teenagers, I haven't yet crossed into
okay.
that. But how I envision myself handling a situation where I have teenage daughters or any teenager who's not showing me my respect is to continually recognize that I can't demand respect but I have to earn that.
Mm-hmm.
And so as much as I can to do the right things, to be involved in my kids' lives, to be emotionally available to them, and hopefully through that begin to build enough trust that the relationship experience some reconciliation. I know it's kind of an ethereal answer, but
that's
again,
okay.
I'm kind of speculating if I was there, because I haven't been there yet.
That's okay. Now, according to the cultural definitions of maleness, you know, we all know that men, they need to be independent and self-reliant and able to provide and strong. And the gospel shows up and says, "Ooh, no, wait, you've got to be dependent on Christ." Right? Because God's the true provider. So I'm wondering, you know, and I believe that to be completely true, but I look at the fast, rapid rise of Islam, where they are trying to empower young men to themselves to be warriors.
Yeah.
To be, not to be dependent and weak, but to be independent and strong.
This is a question that I raise in the book and that I still wonder about. You know, a lot of people are worried about the apparent feminization of the church or the decline of men in attendance on Sunday mornings. And I've wondered if that isn't because of the mixed messages that they experience. So as you were just saying, from culture, you hear you have to be independent, able to care for yourself, meet all your needs, and then they come to church on Sunday and hear, no, actually, you need to be dependent on Christ, and you need to admit your weaknesses, and you need to be willing to deny yourself and allow others to be first, and maybe even turn the other cheek. And men don't hear that as an impossible way for them to live in the world. And something that is so countercultural to the messages we hear in culture about what it means to be a man, that in some ways men are turned off to or hardened to the gospel. This is something that I've really wrestled with, and it's something that I try to get at in the book by telling men that our culture may ask and demand men to prove that they are men. But the gospel never says that we have to prove ourselves to be accepted by Christ. That long before we prove ourselves as worthy, or, you know, before we ever can, because we never really can, prove ourselves of worthy of God calling us sons, God, in fact, adopts us as sons through Jesus Christ. Mm. And so that's a really different message for men. And I think it's one of the more challenging messages for us.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about delighting in weakness. I think of the passage where Jesus shows up when Lazarus has been dead. And, of course, the famous and shortest verse in Scripture, John 11:35, was Jesus wept. And I would think of what he knew he was about to do. He could have shown up and gone, don't worry, don't be crying. I'm going to take care of things here. You're going to be real happy in a few minutes. But instead, he just stepped into their pain with them and cried with them. And that, to me, that verse is so strong and so powerful. But men aren't supposed to cry. They're not supposed to show those kinds of emotions. Sweat that one out, Nate.
Well, exactly right. Men aren't supposed to show emotions, and we are supposed to be able to handle any situation that we find ourselves. And even if we find ourselves in a situation that we deep down feel like we can't handle, we at least have to put on the face that we can handle it, because we're told everybody is relying on us and they need us to be the strong stoic figure.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think is, if we are able to enter into our weakness, just as Jesus entered into the weakness of the human body, if we are able to enter into our weakness, we are actually showing a different kind of strength. We're showing and giving permission to those around us that it's okay to feel the full gamut of the pain of a broken world, that we can feel sadness and we can feel frustration, and that it's okay. So for me, as a father of a young boy, I have been very open with him about the places in my life where I failed, about some of the worries that I have, about the despair that I've felt in certain situations that have happened pretty recently. And my son is 6, and he's already learning how that's not a sign of weakness. That's just an acknowledgement of the brokenness of the world, mm-hmm. and that he too can begin to show emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And And I think that's such a healthy place for us to be. And we can, in those moments where we recognize and name the weakness, we can then ask God to step into it. Or another way to say it, if men can never be weak, then Christ will never be strong in their life.
Yeah.
Another way to say that.
Yeah, Nate, can you open up about one of those failures or weaknesses that you've just recently gone through?
Yeah.
Your voice just went up a little. Yeah, I can, but I'm not sure I want to.
Well, I'm not sure that how much I can say on one of them in particular. But I'll say this: I'm working on a project right now, and the project kind of fell through, and I thought it was going to be something that was going to work, and I was really excited about it. And I heard back from a number of people that I was collaborating with, and they said that this just isn't going to happen.
Yeah, welcome to my and Ted's world.
So I was actually so deflated by this that it happened right before dinner, and I'm sitting at the dinner table and I felt sick to my stomach and I wasn't able to eat and I wasn't able to be present. And I excused myself from the dinner table and just said, I need to go up to my room. I need to go to the bedroom. And I need to lay down for a little bit. My wife and my kids finished up the dinner, and I went up to my room and I just laid in bed and I started crying because I was just so upset that this thing was failing. And I felt like a failure. I think that's the other piece. I felt like a failure. And my son after dinner came up and he laid in bed next to me and he put his hand on my back and he said, Daddy, at school we're working on a book. And it's been really hard for me to draw the pictures and I've gotten really frustrated and I felt sad. But I prayed to God, and God has been able to help me finish my project, and God will help you finish your project too. And I just lost it in that moment, right?
Yeah,
and I went
to
my wife the next day, and I said to her, I said, did you tell him to go up and say that to me? And she looked at me, and she said, no, I didn't tell him to say that at all. He did that because you have already been setting the stage for him and showing him that you've modeled for him how to identify your pain with his pain. And now he was taking his pain and identifying it with your pain.
Wow.
And so that for me was that's a parenting win, even though I felt like such a failure in that moment in some other places in my life. I felt like, no, I think I'm getting this part right.
Yeah. So you were showing your emotions and your vulnerability, and your son, who's a complete sponge at this age, is picking up everything, isn't he?
He is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He's picking it up, and now he's able to actually show compassion and empathy to somebody else, and he's six.
Wow.
Wonderful.
That's very impressive. And we're going to talk lots more with Nate Pyle. He's written a book called Man Enough, How Jesus Redefines Manhood. If you have a question or a comment, I think we've got a couple books to give away. I think we do. Do we? Yeah. Okay, excellent. You can give us a call at 1-877-933-2484. Join the discussion. Because, you know, my questions are not that great. So we'll take a short break and be right back. You're listening to Connecting Faith. Bill Arnold in for Neil Stavem. Thanks for being with us today. Thanks.
It's a manly song, I thought.
It's very manly, yeah. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Glad you joined us today. Bill Arnold is in for Neil. I don't know what Neil's doing today, but probably he's on a staycation. So.
Yes, doing some painting.
Yeah, that's what he was doing yesterday. He's
something
else.
He's probably still doing that.
I doubt it. Anyway, here's a comment from a listener from North Dakota. Her name is Joni. She said, men who grow up and don't learn what Nate is teaching, his son, end up being predators. Your comments about that, Nate?
Yeah, I don't know about becoming predators, but I do believe that if we don't teach our boys and our men how to have the full toolbox when it comes to emotions, I think we end up with some men who really only have two tools in the toolbox. And what I mean by that is there's basically two emotions that are socially acceptable for men to display and keep them from being seen as weak. And that's jealousy and anger.
Mm-hmm.
If a man is jealous or he's angry, he's not seen as weak. He's actually seen as being strong, right? He's standing up for himself, or he's, you know, protecting that which is his. And so men who are emotionally stunted really know how to use anger and jealousy, and only anger and jealousy. Mm-hmm. And so when they feel other emotions, they don't know how to express that or communicate it, and it comes out typically as anger. So a man feels sad and he feels angry. He's disappointed and it comes out as anger. He's hurt and it comes out as anger. Mm. And I think that that can have a pretty detrimental effect on families, on relationships in guys' lives, and even on the church, as men take on different roles in the church, but don't only know how to show anger. That's not one of the fruits of the Spirit.
Yeah.
And so we need to learn how to train our men to be able to access all of their emotions.
Nate, talk a little bit about the difference between being authentic and being vulnerable. I know that when you grow up in the church, you're taught how to be authentic, but maybe not vulnerable. What's the difference?
Yeah. I think you can be authentic without ever risking anything. And so you just said we learn in the church how to be authentic. And I always think of the example in small groups of some sorts, whether it's a Bible study or, you know, a small group that meets in somebody's house. When it comes to the end of the meeting and we sit around and we ask for prayer requests, does anybody have a prayer request? And we all know the safe prayer request, mm-hmm. that shares a little bit that we actually do want prayer for, mm-hmm. but doesn't really risk me looking bad. In fact, that I ask for, it might actually make me look good. Vulnerability is actually asking for prayer or sharing the thing that's going in our lives that may make us look bad. So for a guy, it may be a struggle with pornography that we have, or a difficulty that's going on in a significant relationship in our lives. It may be some feelings of inadequacy that we're struggling with, or anything like that, that normally we wouldn't share. We can be authentic about, well, I want to spend more time with my family. That's great, and everybody can celebrate that, but mm-hmm. that may not be very vulnerable to share.
Well, the good news is no one in the small group would gossip.
Absolutely.
And you don't
not.
Really want to end up on 9 people's prayer lists, and they're doing that as a way of gossiping. Hey, you should add Nate
right.
to your prayer list because he's struggling with pornography. Did you know that?
Right. But that's the thing. Vulnerability involves risk. To be vulnerable, I mean, the word vulnerability literally means that you are able to be wounded, that somebody can hurt you. And so vulnerability isn't something that we want to take lightly. It's something I want to encourage men and women to embrace, but to recognize that there are some places where it is not safe for us to be vulnerable. And mm-hmm. so in the right places, absolutely, men should be vulnerable with people that they trust, with mentors who they know will love them no matter what, with a pastor who really cares for the condition of their heart and their soul. Absolutely, we should press to be more vulnerable. But that doesn't mean that you want to be more vulnerable at the workplace or maybe with everybody in the church.
Mm-hmm.
So showing discretion there is helpful.
Don't we show up going to church, though, more or less presenting an imposter to the world? Here's my church self. Do you like me? What do you think? I'm kind of polished, huh? But you don't know what's going on inside. And if I show up wounded and share my woundedness and get more wounded, then what?
Well, then the obvious is we don't do it again.
Right.
We are people who avoid pain.
Right. But if Christians do it to us, and I know they've done it in the past and they'll do it again, then we're really scared. Then we're really operating out of fear and we're going to close down.
And I think you're exactly right there. And there's a lot of, as a pastor of a church, I recognize that there is a perception that everybody in the church is putting on a mask and they're putting their best foot forward, and there is a degree to which that is true. But in a church of, you know, anything over 150, I think, where you've got 150 people, you can't show up with all of your stuff just hanging out there and feel like you're going to be completely safe. There, trust has to be there. And I think that that's really important. Mm-hmm. Now, to say to your point where Christians will wound us, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to have this idea that in the church, nobody ever gets hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But even Scripture doesn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus in Matthew 18 tells us that if a brother or sister sins against us, that we would go, that we would present it, you know, share with them the sin that's been done against us and try to reconcile. If that doesn't work, we go back with another person, right? We,
mm-hmm.
we know that passage in Matthew 18 pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the assumption in Jesus teaching that is that there will be those among his followers who are in conflict with each other,
mm-hmm.
that it's going to happen. And so even though we are wounded in the church, I think this is where authenticity, vulnerability, embracing weakness is important, where we go to the person and we share with them the impact that they've had on us in hopes that reconciliation will happen and we're able to come together and the peace of Christ dwells among us.
Mm-hmm. Now, Nate, you make a point in your book that men should embrace their weaknesses. Would you be willing to tell us what some of yours are? And then, time permitting, we'll talk about mine.
Yeah.
And I promise there won't be enough time. You go first.
My biggest weakness is that I am afraid of rejection. That if I really let you see who I am, that you will not like me, or you will find some reason to walk away from the relationship. And so what that causes me to do is to put forward my best foot in all situations, even among those who I trust, that I'm going to do everything I can to look good to you, for you, so that you have absolutely no reason to reject me. And what I found in doing that, and this is really where some of the book came from, what I found in doing that is that I was extremely lonely because nobody knew me. People really liked the person I was putting forward, but not even my closest friends truly knew who I was and the anxiety that I experienced on a daily basis, that if they truly knew who I was, that they would walk away. And so for me, I've learned to reveal in appropriate places who I am, what I'm struggling with, accepting that people may not like this, but what I've been finding is that I'm able to connect with people and I feel known, I feel loved. And for me, the first time in my life, I begin to feel like a man and not a boy playing a man. If that makes sense.
It does make sense, especially because I think today it takes boys longer to become men.
Yeah. Yeah. I say in the book, it's one of the first things I say is I didn't feel like a man until I was 31 years old. I'm 36 now, so that was 5 years ago. But that was the first time that I felt like I was actually an adult at the adult table and not the kid sitting at the adult table.
Mm-hmm. And what event prompted that?
Yeah, the event that prompted that was when I was at a spiritual retreat and I shared, we had a whole weekend going on of different things. And throughout the weekend, I became very present to the loneliness and the isolation that I felt. And I began to see that it was because I was putting forward this false self, this masked self, and that's who people were knowing. But me, myself, I was not really known. And when I shared that with a particular individual at the end of the retreat, someone who I trusted, he began to ask, where else does this show up in my life? And I admitted to him that I also felt that from God, that if God really saw me, he would reject me, and that even in my relationship with God, I was not bringing my full self into that relationship, but I was only putting my best foot forward. Because I did not want to lose that. And I thought that his love for me was based on doing all the right things. And throughout the midst of that conversation and some work, he said to me, if you start being really honest with people about who you are and you allow yourself to take down those masks and come out from behind them, you will stop feeling like a 13-year-old boy.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was the biggest bunch of psychobabble I'd ever heard in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found was that it was absolutely true, that the more I showed up fully into whatever situation I found myself in, the more I felt like an adult, and consequently, the more I felt like a man.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to think about that one. I like it, but I have to think about it. It's interesting to me that there you had that revelation, and it and you came to a place where when you were able to reveal parts that could get stepped on is when you started to feel strong.
Yeah. Yep. It's when I, you know, for me, there's another way to think about courage. You know, as men, we talk a lot about courage and what does it mean to be courageous, because we believe that we should, and we absolutely should be courageous. But we have one vision of what courage looks like, and it's the vision of the person who will run into the burning building, right? The person who will step in front of whatever threat is facing another individual, that's courage. But what I've been learning is that courage is also showing the world who you are. Courage is willing, is risking rejection. Courage is risking getting hurt. It takes a lot of courage to live, as Brené Brown would say, wholeheartedly. And I think that for me was the moment where I began to feel strong.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very challenging for a man in today's culture to take on the burden of human growth, because only humans can change. Dogs don't change, cats don't change, only humans do. And I think that when you talk about revealing to others exactly who you are, which is noble, maybe before you do that, you should start putting together a campaign of improving yourself so you can even show an improved version of yourself as you get on this track. Is that fair, or have I lost you?
I would actually say that showing people before and inviting them into that process. So for me, I didn't do anything. I didn't clean myself up. I didn't improve myself in any way when I let Jim is this man's name, when I let Jim see who I was. And from that point on, I invited him into the process.
Mm-hmm.
Because I needed someone who would sometimes hold up the mirror or ask the question about myself, ask the question that I wouldn't ask myself, mm-hmm. that he would ask questions about me for me.
Mm-hmm.
I needed that person to really begin to see where I needed to grow or where I was maybe falling short. So I wouldn't clean ourselves up to so we can show people our best. I think there's a few people we need to let in so that they can help us in that process.
No, I'm not suggesting you have to clean yourself up to show yourself. I'm suggesting that because only humans change, and most of us, I think God pretty much looks at us and says, I love you exactly the way you are. Now let's get on to changing. that we have other men in our lives, because I think men make other men better, and mm-hmm. we need to have that accountability and rawness and honesty. And I just think that if we show up to the table letting people know who we are with the desire to change, we're going to be better off.
Yes. Now that I would absolutely agree with. And I think you even just clearly stated how I see the love of God, the love of Jesus at work in our lives, where Jesus accepts us as we are, but he refuses to let us stay there. And that is the best way that we can love one another too, where we can fully accept each other where we are and yet refuse to let one another stay in that place. But we call each other to something better. We call each other to imitate Christ to an even greater degree.
Mm-hmm. All right. If we have flared up your testosterone in this conversation, you want to give us a call. We've got a little bit more time left with Nate. Give us a call at 1-877-933-2484. Talking to Nate Pyle. He's written a book called Man Enough, How Jesus Redefines Manhood. You're listening to Connecting Faith. Bill Arnold in for Neil Stavem. Thanks for listening today. We'll be right back. Today, he wrote a book called Man Enough, How Jesus Redefines Manhood. And there was a caller that said, my pastor always says, I had to see a man to be a man. So modeling is important, isn't it, Nate?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think men need guides. I think this is the important role of fathers and their sons, and why it is important for fathers to have not just quality time with their kids, but quantity of time, because our kids need to see us in all different areas. So absolutely, I'd say being a man is something that is definitely caught.
Mm-hmm. Now, because men struggle with emotions, because it's not our wheelhouse as much as it is for women, women understand emotions, women understand words, they have a much better sense of that. I want to talk about the benefit that we can get from your book that men and women can enjoy.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're exactly right. Women are more in tune with their emotions, and I think this is where God has designed that men and women would complement one another. And we can use that language, and that has a whole bunch of different connotations in other areas. But in this area where we're talking about how men and women together make one another better, this is an area where men have a lot to learn from women and where we should learn from them about how to identify our emotions. And so women, if you're listening, you have a great role to play in the lives of the men who you know, to help them be fully human by understanding their emotions and helping them to embrace their emotions, just as men have a great opportunity to help women to become more active agents in the world. I think this is one of the ways in which men and women are different. Women have an agency in the world that tends to be more relational. Men have an agency in the world that tends to be more physical. We like to move things and shake things and break things. And so men and women together can help each other grow in these areas so that we can be who God has intended us to be.
Mm-hmm. A counselor friend of mine said that women need to love men for who they are instead of loving them for who they want them to be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that sits, but I know we're always supposed to be figuring out ways to grow in every relationship we have, and to be listening and being fair-minded in how we listen. And, you know, the same counselor said you need to speak without being offensive and listen without being defensive. My friend Todd Mulliken said that. And so it's a way that we try to navigate, because you said a man's got to understand his emotions so he can relate to a woman's emotions.
Yeah, I
hanging you out to dry on that
true.
One?
Well, maybe, I mean, we're getting into a little bit of an area that I don't know women, and I didn't study that as much, but
right.
I do think we're getting into a place where there's truth to that, that in order for men to relate to women, we've got to understand our emotions, and we got to understand the impact that emotions have on an individual. At the same time, in order for a man to understand his emotions, he may need the help of a woman who understands exactly where the guy is, that a man may not have that full access to all his emotions. And so when she gets frustrated, when she says, well, how are you feeling? And he says, fine, or I don't know.
Yeah.
That actually,
let me write that down.
True.
That's a good answer. I need to remember that one.
That's gold, Nate. Completely true.
Yeah. So how is everything with you? So, I don't know. Fine.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And to help him draw that out, don't just say, you know, well, I expect you to be at this place where you can give me the full gamut of what you're feeling in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe the woman enters into that and says, okay, I understand that. Let me coach you or help you or even just talk with you about it depends on the relationship, obviously, how that works it out. But a woman can help a man move beyond that, understanding that that's exactly where he is in that moment. And that's okay. That's part of the love that we model that comes from God, where God accepts us and doesn't leave us, that we would accept – a woman would accept a man right where he is, but maybe not leave him there, but accept him there. Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about the big life lessons that you have to this juncture and what you've learned, what God has given you to share with others about lessons you'd want to pass along to your son and for our listeners to pass on to their younger children.
Yeah. I think the number one thing that I'm trying to instill in my son and that I want others to understand is that while the world requires us to prove so much, Jesus never asks us to prove anything, that his love for us is unconditional, that he loves us in the midst of our brokenness, that in the midst of not being deemed worthy, Jesus actually says, you are my sons, you are my daughters, and despite the fact that you have failed in so many ways, I think you are worthy of the title of son and daughter. Mm-hmm. And I think if we can rest in that truth, that frees us up to inhabit our relationships differently. For guys, that means I don't have to be competitive. I don't have to try to one-up my friend. I don't have to have the better story. I don't have to be the best athlete. I'm freed up to actually love the person across from me and not just compete with them. It also frees us up from having to look strong all the time. We can look weak because we know that God has already said, you are my son, and the strength of Christ will be made available to us. For me, the biggest life lesson is just simply resting in our identity as sons and daughters of God. So that's one big thing. And then
that is a huge thing.
Yeah, I don't want to downplay that.
No, that's huge. I love it.
And I think the other thing where you started out the interview and you talked about how in our culture men are seen as warriors, mm-hmm. and that picture is often used for in churches as well, that men are warriors for God. And there may be an aspect to which that's true, but I think there's something important about recapturing the image from the very beginning of Genesis 1 where the man and the woman are gardeners. They're stewards. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, there's a time to protect the garden and put up a fence around it so critters don't get in. But there's also this, we're tilling the soil. We're taking responsibility for the land and for the harvest. And as men and women, what it means to be made in the image of Jesus is that we're taking responsibility for the land around us, the world that we inhabit. We are saying, in some ways, God has given us watch over this. And so on our watch, we are going to make sure that the reign and the rule of God exists as much as possible in this place. Not because we have to prove ourselves to God, not because we're trying to earn his favor, not because we're trying to look good, because we're already sons and daughters. Mm-hmm. But as sons and daughters, this is our responsibility.
Mm-hmm. All right, we only have about a minute left. Now, you're a pastor of a church. What would you consider to be the number one problem men are suffering or struggling with in your church family?
In our church family, it's been connection with other men.
Mm-hmm.
And so recently we've had men's group that have started up that is simply to do just this, just to help men connect with one another, to be honest about what's going on in their hearts and in their souls, and get beyond just the, hey, we're doing a book study to become better fathers or better husbands, but really trying to become fully human people who are living into the image of God, looking like Jesus as much as possible in their lives.
Mm-hmm. And so, just trying to get, you know, men struggle making friendships. They try to make
yep.
connections because it might help business or it might serve them in some way. And I don't want to make men out to be, you know, self-serving like that. But oftentimes, you know, churches are a great place to connect. How do we really sit down and develop a friendship is kind of the big question. So, you know, Nate, the time has run out, and we have had a very interesting conversation. So thank you so much for bringing to our attention so many of these great points about manhood today.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
No, it's been our pleasure. Thanks so much. Nate's book is called Man Enough, Nate Pyle, How Jesus Redefines Manhood. We're going to put that up on our website at myfaithradio.com. Go to Connecting Faith and you'll find the interview. You can send that on to your friends and your people that you know that would benefit from hearing this. That wraps up our time today on Connecting Faith. I'm so glad you joined us and I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Bill Arnold and Ted and Carissa and I all say thanks. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being friends of Faith Radio.